Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities, all you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way.
Welcome. This is brother Jay.
And this is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about
The Abyss.
Yes, which is, this is brother Drew's pick.
And we did not invite Eric.
Well, he's invited. I just think he lucked out. So this was 1989. I was working at a movie theater in 89.
Yes, so, I think Eric and I actually saw this at your movie theater for free because of you.
I think you probably did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So much to say.
So this is a James Cameron movie, and I don't have his filmography yet, but I'm pretty sure it takes place after in his filmography after Aliens, but before T2.
Let's see.
Back when he used to make films regularly.
Terminator 84, Rambo 85. No, sorry, Rambo 2. Did he do Rambo 2 and not Rambo 1?
Those are movies he wrote, right? Not that he directed.
Is he writing credits? Did I click the wrong tab? Oh, yes. Thanks, IMDb. Director. Okay, here we go. Oh, God. Avatar 2, 2022. Avatar 3, 2024. Avatar 4, 2026. Avatar 5, 2028. Avatar 2 and 3, by the way, are in post-production.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Terminator 84, Aliens 86, The Abyss 89, Terminator 2 91, True Lies 94.
Yeah, he had a good run. Titanic made him so rich, he chose to stop making movies.
Then Avatar in 2009... And then, so he didn't get any credit for the rest of the, so he didn't direct any of the other Terminator.
No.
The Abyss, 1989. Let's see when it was released.
He wrote The Abyss too, right?
Yes, he did. So this was a summer movie. Well, summer-ish, August 9th. God, I would have just 89. I would have just been working there. I think that would have been, I think, the beginning of my career there. Maybe the end. I can't remember. No, it would have been towards the end because I quit before Terminator 2.
Did you? I feel like we saw a midnight showing of Terminator 2 because of you.
Yeah, but that was I quit. That was at the point at which I quit.
I'm glad you stuck it out for that.
Well, I just didn't give my notice. I just stopped showing up, and then I gave him the middle finger. Let's see. Movie was budgeted, estimated at $70 million. Opening weekend of $9 million. USA gross, $54 million. Cumulative gross, $90 million. So, not a great show. It was a 70mm print, which is... So, God, so we would have played it on the big... We would have played it in the big house on the big screen. With the big projector. So we had a 70mm projector.
My memory of seeing it in the theater is that it looked great.
Oh yeah, on the 70mm projectors, those things are amazing.
I'm really mad at Amazon Prime because the transfer that I was able to watch. I don't know if it was different in your neck of the woods, but mine was a really shitty looking 4x3 framed
Letterboxd
version of the version of this movie.
Yeah.
No, made me really mad. It looked like garbage.
It was and I watched it on my big TV. It was it was noticeably lacking in quality.
Mm-hmm.
70 millimeter films were rare. They're expensive. They're heavy. They're big. I mean, they're just heavy to put in a projector. Also, we had to run coolant lines when we make 70 millimeter because the aperture is twice as big. So the light coming behind the xenon bulbs is twice as big. So you could actually set the machines on fire if you didn't have coolant running through them. So I hated 70 millimeter films. Batman was one. This one.
Yeah, sort of analogous to like seeing regular or IMAX versions of movies today, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even know what the IMAX. Well, except I think those are at least digital now. So there's not, I don't know that they're film. Yeah. Which is better in some ways. But yeah, God, I don't miss acetate film. I mean, it's nostalgic for me to go back and watch that stuff, but it was messy and it smelled and it was temperamental and you could melt it and catch things on fire and the light bulbs could kill you. And how they ever put teenagers in charge of this and thought that was a good idea, I'll never understand.
So had you seen this movie before?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I didn't see it in the theater. At that time, I actually didn't see a lot of movies in the theater during this time when I was working there. I didn't see it in the theater. I saw it on TV at some point, I believe. On cable, not on TV, on an actual cable, like on a Cinemax or something. But it would have been in the late 90s, mid to late 90s, probably.
Sure.
My opinion hasn't changed from that viewing.
No? What do you think of this movie?
This movie is hot garbage juice.
Oh, no.
This movie's got some problems.
It does have some problems.
I like the... Do I like the premise? I was going to say I like the premise, but that's going to be a lie. I think what it was trying to do is that Cameron-esque kind of commentary on the environment, because that was kind of what it was leading up to. In this case, it was about nuclear proliferation in a not in any way subtle way.
Yeah, you can see a lot of ideas and themes in this movie that he's carried into other movies. Other more successful movies.
I think my problem with it, which is has remained through the decades, this movie is trying to do a lot at the same time, and it's not doing any of it well. It's trying way too many directions, and so it goes nowhere having a direction, which would have at least a cohesive direction would have given it a little more depth of the story. But this was, there's so much that just like kept throwing more shit at you in the story to hope that you wouldn't notice that they were just moving forward. And so it seemed very, and again, I'm watching this movie, you know, decades after having seen it again. So, it just seemed disjointed and incoherent. It was very slipshod and kind of it was baffling. I think that's what got me, is I just kept like, these are some weird choices, I'm baffled by these.
Yeah, I remember really liking this movie, you know. In fact, I think I bought like a fancy DVD version of it when it came out.
Nice.
Because my memory was that it looked amazing. The effects were really cool. You know, that water effect, was really innovative at the time, and looked really cool. The environment was a really unique one, sort of the deep sea environment and what that meant. All the underwater stuff was really cool. But yeah, watching it again this time, it was really difficult. This was work to get through, and a lot of that is the writing.
Yes.
James Cameron has a problem with women, right?
Clearly.
He cannot, you know, if I think about Lindsay in this movie and Sarah Connor in T2, he cannot figure out how to make a strong, aggressive woman who is also reasonable and likable.
Yeah,
those characteristics seem like cannot coexist in his world.
And I think I agree with you. I think my issue also was because of the writing. It's very dated. The dialogue is very dated.
Yes.
And so that does not serve this movie well. The prism of time has not been kind to this dialogue. But it just seems so over the top for the sake of being, I think, to just really add emphasis in the most inelegant, unsubtle way, obvious way ever. Like, there was no subtlety or nuance. This was all just like constant, you know, big jackhammer to the face. Because the tone was either zero or 1,000.
Yeah, it was at 11. Everybody was on 11 the entire time.
It sure seemed like it. But it also seemed like many of them were in different movies from one another.
Yeah, there were a couple different movies going on. There's like the Michael Biehn movie.
Yes.
There's the Mary Elizabeth Master Antonio movie.
Yes.
There's the movie with the rat.
Yes.
There's an alien movie there somewhere.
The movie with the ocean rovers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, for a while, I kept seeing Michael Biehn as Freddie Mercury.
That's weird.
He just had that Freddie Mercury look to him. So
he had that awful mustache.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I had enjoyed this movie more, I would have gone back and taken a closer look at his mustache, because maybe I made this up while I was watching him, but like when he showed up on the sub or on the, was it a sub? Like the deep sea rig. When he showed up, he was looking like pretty put together. He had a nice thick bushy mustache, which is great. But then later when he was losing his shit, his mustache looked really ragged.
Sinister.
I think they actually like changed the look and wiliness of his mustache to communicate that he was losing his mind.
Because that's what happens when you lose your mind. Your mustache and beard just go crazy on their own.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're joking, but I did experience that during COVID.
That was over the more of the span of the supposed 3 or 4 days or however many days they were buried in the.
Yeah. Yeah. His transformation happened like in under 30 hours.
Yeah. And there were so many science things wrong with this. That's the other thing that really got me. There was just so much implausible and impossible on top of the fantastical that I just couldn't. I had a hard time respecting large parts of this, you know, not the least of which is at that depth, it'll crush machines, but human beings without any kind of protection, but a wetsuit are fine.
Or sometimes even without a wetsuit.
Yeah. Also at that depth, the temperature of water would be so cold, it would be instant hypothermia.
Yeah. I think that's one smart thing about setting the movie like in deep, deep water, because it's such a unique setting. that everything feels kind of weird and new and disorienting. So if the movie will let you experience plausible deniability, then all that stuff is just kind of like, oh, well, this is weird, but whatever. Unfortunately, this time, and I think that's how I did take it the first couple times I watched this movie. But this time, I was just so annoyed. I was so annoyed at the 4x3 framing. I was annoyed at just how bad it looked. I started to kind of nitpick all that kind of stuff.
It was distracting to me. That's the problem. There was just so much wrong with the physics, the dynamic. And granted, I can suspend my disbelief to a certain degree, and I can give creative license to a certain degree. Lazy writing is one. I get it. Like, fine, to some degree. But then there's just some things where they're contradicting themselves in their own behavior. That's what I really have the hard time with. And plus, big parts of this movie were just so obviously, it was just so obviously telegraphed for later. But I think this movie suffers from having too many actors. There was too many characters in this movie. So I don't think
that's a rough thing to say when it's essentially just one group of people in one location. that's rough.
But they were trying to do too much with too many moving parts. I think that's where it failed. So we'll go through the plot synopsis real quickly.
I'll just say one more thing.
Sure.
Two more things. Sorry, maybe a couple more. I love Michael Biehn. I was happy to see him. Even though his character didn't really make any sense, I always like him. I wish that James Cameron made more movies so that Michael Biehn could work more. But also, Ed Harris. Ed Harris is so good. He's always good. Like I have now put him, in the same category as like William Hurt. Always good.
Yeah.
The movie may not be good. They are always good in whatever movie they're in.
He's never half-assing it.
No, and he's so good. He's so charming and believable in this movie. He really is the bright shining star of this movie. He's always enjoyable to watch, even when he's being a jerk. So I was happy to see him. I'm bummed that he didn't have a good experience with this movie. I don't know if you read anything about it. He will not talk about this movie. he refuses.
Wow.
There are reports that he may have taken a swing or two at James Cameron while they were filming, but yeah, he's to this day he still won't talk about it.
What is that attributed to?
I don't know. Maybe. Toxic workplace environment, man.
Oh well,
I mean it doesn't look like it was very much fun to make, you know. Water movies are great for creating tension, but yeah, I can't imagine just being wet and miserable all the time.
That's
for however many takes you have to do of the same scene.
I think that's what would wear on you, because you're going to be cold and damp, and after a certain period of time, no, thank you. Let's see. The Montana, a U.S. Navy nuclear submarine, nuclear missile submarine, operating deep in the Cayman Trough in the Caribbean Sea, encounters an unidentified moving object that seems to be going super duper fast. First, it's going kind of fast, then it's going really fast, and then they're going supposedly super duper light speed fast. Through this, the submarine ends up like crashing into some kind of reef structure and imploding, exploding, disintegrating, and
speaking of, everything okay?
I have no idea what my dog just did. Go.
I'm glad it was your dog.
Yeah, well, I don't know what he's doing. One moment. Butthead. I don't usually close my office door when he's in here so he can get out. And I think the door sometimes gets stuck on the door frame at the top. Just because of, I don't know, it needs adjusting and I haven't gotten to it because I'm lazy. So he pulls at it at the bottom with his paw to open it, and it didn't give and didn't give and didn't give. And then eventually it gave and he's like, bam, right into himself. and then he just looked at me like, why did I do that to you? Like, why did I hit him with the door? Except clearly I didn't. So, but that was the look he gave me. let's see. So the sub collides, implodes, explodes, whatever. I mean, I assume it was implosion, but killing the entire crew, ostensibly.
I don't know if you mentioned, I wasn't listening. But the sub lost power, right, at one point.
Right. They had like almost like an EMP kind of issue.
Yes. Yeah. So they think they're being attacked.
They think they're being nuked. And of course, this is set in the Cold War still.
Mm-hmm.
So 89 would have still been the Cold War. So, you know, the evil Russians.
Before the fall of the Berlin Wall, before it looked like the whole thing might collapse.
But it's decided that as the Soviets are rushing to price steel technology and missiles from this ship, the Americans also decide they need to go and rescue this as soon as possible before the Russians can get their hands on it. But there is some urgency to it because, of course, there's a giant hurricane that's coming into the area.
Now, maybe you were paying more attention. Were the Russians really coming for the sub, or were they just assuming that the Soviets were gonna try and salvage it because they assumed the Soviets were the ones that sank it?
That was the implication I got. They didn't come out and say it.
Like they never said like they were tracking Soviet subs location or anything.
No, they just made the implication that they had to be going recovered before somebody else came and got it.
Yeah,
and then they were pointing the finger at who would have done this,
right?
And so they apparently contact this deep underwater oil platform, drilling platform, that apparently is super engineered and can be moved easily.
Yeah, it looks pretty sweet.
Yeah. And so they, the deep core. So they partner, the government partners with this company, the run by Virgil, right? Bud Brigman, played by Ed Harris.
He's the foreman, like he's in charge of the platform, but right. he doesn't, beyond giving his crew work assignments, he doesn't actually have any authority within the company.
And then they go to great pains to offload the Navy SEALs from a helicopters down to getting them to the oil rig, along with Bud's estranged wife. Are they still married?
Mm-hmm. Okay, they are still married.
And they go to great pains to play up what a horrible, terrible, mean monster bitch she is.
Yeah, which is, it's never earned. She's very smart. She built the rig. She designed it and built the rig, so she knows the ins and outs. And she's very she's aggressively protective of it, and she doesn't take shit from anybody. And because of that, everybody, including herself, calls her a cast iron bitch.
Yeah.
That's the level of writing that we were dealing with in this movie.
Yeah.
which I seemed fine with when I was 13.
Well, again, a different level. Also in the 80s, I think that would have been just standard fare, right?
But it's, yeah, it's, I mean, I think it was short, you know, it was taking shortcuts for actually developing her character.
Yeah, it was just bad writing. Just bad. Mm-hmm. It's just it bad was. Writing. Like there, it wasn't witty. It was like low hanging fruit. But
mm-hmm.
Apparently, so on their way down to the platform, there's supposedly it was 8 hours in a compression chamber, but that's never, I don't think it's clearly defined. This synopsis claims that it was 8 hours, but I don't think
that was text in the movie.
Yeah, I don't have any evidence of this. So, but this is from the internet. So the synopsis is, you know, kind of right. The team emerges from their compression chamber onto the platform, but nobody notices that Lieutenant Coffey, played by Michael Biehn, seems to be having some high pressure nervous syndrome issues, which they talk about the effect of what causes some people to get psychosis underwater. And they never know. It's random.
Is this a real thing?
I don't know.
This seems like a great movie device.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know if it's a real thing.
I've never heard of it, but that doesn't mean anything. Let's look it up, shall we? High pressure.
Have you heard of a movie called Underwater?
Maybe.
This was kind of a small movie starring Kristen Stewart a year or two ago. I watched it during lockdown. It was on HBO. I'd never heard of it, but it just showed up, and so I watched it. And it's a deep sea kind of disaster movie that turns into a monster movie. And it's really good. It's not really good. It's really entertaining. It's short. It's fast paced. Kristen Stewart's really good in it. And because it's in this, like, just this horrible, horribly dangerous environment, when the rig starts to stuff starts to go wrong with the rig, the tension is ratcheted up immediately and stays there throughout the entire movie as they're trying to figure out a way to get back to the surface. But 80, it was under 90 minutes. I'm sure of that. And it was great. It was like, it never stayed still long enough for you to start to really think about any of the logic loopholes of what they're doing. And I kept thinking about how much more enjoyable that movie was while I was watching this movie.
Did it look better?
Yes. Yeah. I think it was, you know, it had 22 years on this movie. So
yeah.
32 years.
Yeah. 89.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Isn't that terrifying when you look back at 89? It was like, oh God, it was that long ago.
Yeah.
High pressure nervous syndrome or high pressure neurological syndrome is characterized by neurological, psychological, and electroencephalographic abnormalities that are noted during dives deeper than 150 meters that involve breathing helium oxygen gas mixtures. Signs and symptoms depend on the speed of compression and the hydrostatic pressure attained. The faster the rate of compression rate and the higher the pressure, the more severe the clinical presentation will be. HPNS is one of the significant limitations of deep diving. So apparently it's a real thing.
All right. Well, apparently it makes you want to nuke aliens and start cutting yourself.
There's apparently drugs for it, although not indicated, because it can inhibit breathing, which I guess you probably don't want when you're underwater. Complications. Yeah, this doesn't sound fun. This is not a fun thing. You know what I would have liked to have been 90 minutes? This movie.
Yeah.
This movie was long. 2.5 hours, maybe?
Sounds right.
Oh my god, it seemed like forever. But I digress. Let's see.
Well, so, when I was picking movies for the two of us to do, I kept thinking, I know Jason really likes long movies.
I actually do like long movies. When they're good. I actually do like the long movies, though. I do appreciate them. I think part of that goes, again, part of the inside baseball. Part of that goes to when I worked at the movie theater. Long movies were awesome because they required less babysitting. Because you could go longer periods. Cool.
Sam, we're going to do Zack Snyder's Justice League. Book it.
It's like 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think what movie did I watch that was like some Joan of Arc thing that I thought was going to be not very long and turned out to be like 5 hours long. Should have been a damn Arc. Should have huh?
Joan of Arc
should have been funny. A damn miniseries, but no, it's a movie. Let's see. Okay, nobody notices that Lieutenant Coffey is shaky and probably suffering from this high pressure nervous syndrome.
Stand by.
Canine doorbell. I'm just going to sit here and eat a piece of candy and smack my lips. So good. Chocolate.
No worries. Just neighbors.
let's see. Bud and Lindsay are now arguing because reasons. That's why they're arguing.
Fake tension.
Yeah. And then Bud throws his wedding band into the blue Biffy juice toilet.
Gross.
And then fishes it out. Staining his hand blue. Apparently this ring, by the way, is made with unobtainium.
It must
could
be.
Not be crushed by a hydraulic door.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Didn't even lose its shape.
No. I just so ridiculous. Let's see. So they get all settled in. They move the rig to where they think they want it to go. The Navy SEALs show them this example of this oxygenated liquid pink goo that they are using instead of compressed gas, because apparently you can go to deeper dives and it's better for you and you don't get decompression issues and blah, blah, blah. And they make a big point by taking the dude's rat and I don't know, giving a terrible display of that this won't actually hurt an animal.
Yeah, from the rat's perspective, they drown it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't die.
Yeah, because that wouldn't be terrifying at all.
Right.
Let's see. They go down to search the sub for survivors and kind of investigate around. And Jammer, one of the crew from the rig, freaks out, right? Sees something, hits his head, can't breathe, ends up having to be brought back quickly to the main rig as the storm is raging. And, of course, when they're back on the rig, he's going to be in a coma. They're not sure what's going on with him. They're like, we don't know.
Yeah. He gets. It is terrifying being in that sub with the dead bodies and stuff. And
oh, I like
crabs crawling in and out of people's faces.
That was totally like shock value. Mm-hmm. That was like jump scare kind of bullshit.
That was my favorite part of the movie.
Was it really?
No, I actually quite like. I really like the alien stuff. I like the. The super deep dive Ed Harris goes on.
Mm-hmm.
That was, there was a ton of stuff they could have and should have cut out of this movie just to get to that, because that was some tension that was really well earned.
Yes. Let's see. The Navy SEALs have been ordered to, because the storm is intensifying, the Navy SEALs have been ordered to retrieve the warheads from the ship, the sub, the collapse sub, and bring them back to the rig and possibly use it as a contingent weapon in case the Russians show up.
Right. And because they took that submersible, what do they call it, rover, without they couldn't disconnect the rig from the topside ship in time, right?
That was the premise.
Yeah, so because they did that, that's what cause everything else to go haywire, because they couldn't disconnect their umbilical cord. So when the top ship was experiencing turbulence because of the hurricane, it started to drag them around and damage a whole bunch of stuff and killed what, 7 people?
Oops.
Because you're right, they had too many people.
Couldn't have written plot for all those people. It would have been a 5-hour movie. Mm-hmm. Because they all had quippy lines and saucy attitudes. Also, can we talk about they're just carrying warheads in a duffel bag back to a ship?
That's fine.
It's fine. Just nonchalant, just like all in a bag together. Da da da. Like, seriously?
Well, we're about to get to my absolute favorite thing in the movie. When Coffee is just completely losing his shit, and he decides that after they've had a couple more of these deep sea alien encounters, he's decided for some reason that they're the threat. Made no sense. So he's gonna nuke them. Lindsay figures this out. So she, I don't know, yells at Coffee and hurts his feelings. So he gets his buddy, the only other SEAL left in full health, to take over the ship by force and by gunpoint. And this is the best thing that happens in the entire movie. For some reason, when Coffee and his no-name buddy are going all wacko military dude on the rest of the crew, for no explained reason, he just sports a Rambo headband. Like, he shows up, he's tied a strip of cloth around his head for no reason. It's like, I'm about to go fuck up some shit. I need to look cooler.
He needed to keep the water from his eyes,
I guess.
They were going to be splashing around.
He was the worst.
You're around all that water. You don't want some sea spray, right?
I mean, Michael Biehn, he didn't need a headband to look menacing.
No, because he had that mustache.
Yeah, and his big Ringo energy.
Also, was the implication by calling Kimberly Scott's character One Night that she was like a loose woman? Was that what they were trying to go for? Were they trying to implicate or infer, I guess is the better term. Were they trying to infer that she slept around? Was that the running gag?
Maybe that might be the more charitable interpretation, because otherwise One Night could be an indication that she's the only black character.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. I hope it's not that.
Your interpretation is way better.
not by much, but my interpretation would go with the sexism that Mr. Cameron clearly seems to favor.
Yeah.
Let's see.
It makes me nervous about revisiting Titanic.
I've never seen Titanic.
You know, when Titanic came out, I had to act like I didn't like it because it was such a huge movie for teenage girls. Because I'm a dude. But honestly, it was a really good movie. Really good movie. But this makes me nervous about going back to rewatch it.
It will be a new experience for me, so perhaps it will not be terrible.
Like, I think Rose in that movie is a pretty cool character. But I hope it's not like this movie where I find out, like, oh shit, this is some real bad writing for her. I'll be really bummed if that's the case.
I mean, it's tough for this because you look at True Lies, and True Lies had bad dialogue in it, but that was forgivable.
Well, yeah, because True Lies was so campy.
Yeah, but this was trying to be, I believe it was trying to be a serious. Well, I think so. Let me back up. I think the problem I have with this movie is that you never know what this movie is trying to do. Is it trying to be a horror movie? Is it trying to be a thriller? Is it trying to be sci-fi? Is it like, what is this movie actually trying to do? Because I don't think it does anything effectively.
Is it a love story?
A romance?
Is it just a straight up action movie?
Is it
a disaster movie? I don't know.
Yeah,
you ask great questions.
Neither of us have answers.
There aren't answers.
Get Cameron on the phone. Just get him on the phone right now. All right. So One Night can't disconnect the umbilical by cutting it or whatever. They're stuck. They get dragged across the floor. People die. Things explode.
That was the worst special effect in the entire movie. It was her with the robot arm trying to grab the cord and it missing.
Well, you know, they spent all their budget on water creatures.
Yeah, I mean, it was almost Clash of the Titans level. But maybe that was just the super terrible, shitty version of it that I watched on Amazon Prime.
And no, it looked pretty ridiculous. So because the umbilical doesn't manage to get disconnected, the ship on the top side in the storm tosses them. It has had a catastrophic crane failure.
Mm-hmm.
Which seems like pretty poor engineering design on something that's used out at sea. Like, you wouldn't have something that was breakaway. Like, it just like implodes and collapses in the
it's a tearaway crane. You're right.
So the rig gets dragged almost to the edge, almost over the edge, but causes all kinds of damage and mayhem and traps them in parts of the rig, and they start worrying about air supply and not, well, their supply of air, I should say. Everybody worries about air supply.
Yeah, okay. The crane falling was great. That was such great tension, and then tension break, and then oh shit. I mean, that was great. I mean, for as many bad things in this movie, that was really great because the crane was falling right on top of them. They couldn't do anything about it. They were going to get crushed. And then it lands right next to them. And they're like, oh, cool. We're saved. But it lands next to them, also next to the edge of the trench. And then it slowly tips over into the trench. And then you get a couple seconds where you realize they're still attached and it's going to drag them down.
Oops.
That was great. That was a really good part of the movie.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. Like 90 seconds.
Yeah. Also no dialogue because they were inanimate objects.
No, there's dialogue. Lindsay started going, oh no, 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 no.
So then, but Lindsay heads out to, I don't know, what did she, to go survey. She goes out to procure oxygen tanks, right?
I don't remember. I didn't care.
Because that's when she spots the little pink ET water creature things.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, she freaks her out and nobody, you know, nobody believes her. And she, anyway, this is all, none of this matters. This is so incidental. And then through all of this, the tension and the crazy and the haha, Coffee decides that they're going to activate and strap one of the nuclear missile warheads to the big, to one of the rovers.
Well, he gets, before they're cut off completely, he gets orders to go to phase two, right? That's why they went and got the warhead, and they were going to arm it in case they needed to deploy it. But that's when the water thing enters the rig, right?
Yeah.
The water spiral. And that's what freaks him out. And he took that as some sign of attack.
Now, you probably don't know you probably don't know a lot about nuclear missiles, but you have a warhead, but you have to have more than a warhead to have a missile work. No, you have to have a detonator. You have to, I mean, there's lots of pieces. There's lots of pieces. Just the warhead on its own does not a bomb make.
I mean, it could. I mean, like a nuclear detonation, you just have to have some sort of mechanism that, I mean, in its simplest form, you have two masses of radioactive material and you jam them together to make one supercritical mass, and then it goes supercritical. All the, you know, it keeps it keeps fissioning, and then the daughter products keep fissioning, and that's what causes the huge explosion, because all that energy is released in such a quick amount of time. So I guess in theory, I mean, you don't need like an explosive detonator. You just need some sort of mechanism that causes it to go supercritical.
Okay. So was this realistic?
I don't know.
In the slightest? Okay. It just seemed to be in that close proximity of radioactive fissile material would be unhealthy.
I would think so. I wouldn't want to do it.
Especially because they were carrying them around in a duffel bag. Oh, and just had them, also having them in close proximity to one another. Would that also not cause problems?
Well, it was just one, right?
No, they salvaged a bunch of them.
Oh, I thought they only had one.
Oh, no, I thought they had multiple. They only armed one, but I thought they had multiple.
But yeah, I mean, again, well, you got matters. A bunch of, they had a bunch of missiles next to each other in the sub, right?
I suppose. Yeah. Hey, none of this matters. Then they're back on the ship. Nobody really believes Lindsay's crazy story of water aliens, water creatures. And then the water tentacle appears and crawls through the ship, which was actually, you're right, this is some good special effects. It was tension. It certainly was captivating in as much as you didn't know what was going on. It drove Freddie Mercury crazy.
It still looked pretty good.
Yeah.
Even especially considering the shitty version of the movie that I was watching.
they had that weird moment where the water tentacle is mimicking Lindsay.
Yeah, first Lindsay and
then Bud. And then
whatever his name was.
So that was a little tension inducing because you didn't know what was gonna happen, right? Like suddenly next thing you know, the water tentacles in her lungs and drowning her from the inside, right? that's where my brain went. Mm-hmm. But of course, paranoid Lieutenant Coffey sees this weird creature and slams the door on it and causes it to basically the form to disform. And there's just water everywhere now. And they speculate that whatever these creatures have learned to manipulate water, and they try and make some big ham-handed scientific argument, which of course I just didn't even, I couldn't be bothered with. So
yeah, didn't matter. Keep them in. I did like the concept of, I forget what they deemed it, but sort of the, not an extraterrestrial creature, but like an intra-terrestrial creature, right? Like, not an alien from outer space, but an alien from deep sea. That's a pretty cool.
Is it really an alien though? I mean, I guess not. I mean, that was the thing though, that the movie never really establishes. Was it an alien or was it just like some Atlantean?
Yeah, there's some sort of advanced intelligence that we've never encountered before because it lives in such deep water. That's a pretty cool concept.
Smart enough to stay away from us for a while anyway. The fools.
Yep.
Then there's some tension. The crew finds out that the warhead's live, and there's fighting back and forth, and they lock people up, and they lock the military SEAL dudes in the one area, but that doesn't seem to work out. And anyway, this is all this crazy is happening. None of this matters, by the way.
Worst part of the movie.
And then they have to the whole then they have the submersible like speed racer fight, right?
Well, even before that, they had like the ultimate face palm moment where to extricate themselves from where they were locked in, Ed Harris has to essentially just kick off his shoes and go swimming. And it seems fine.
Yeah. In deep pressure water that's super cold. That crushes vehicles and objects, but seemingly has no impact on bodies.
Yeah. And I'm not sure which was less believable, that or that this drill rig foreman could hold his own in a hand-to-hand fight with a Navy SEAL.
Well, except don't forget he was a crazy Navy SEAL. He was suffering from this syndrome thing.
Yeah, and Ed Harris should have been suffering from crippling hypothermia.
Well, there's that. Oh, you can't bring bits of science into it. You have to bring all or nothing. See,
they went with nothing.
Yeah, no, they really did. I think that's what really offended me. Is it's like they didn't even try. Like they need rovers that deep, but they don't need rovers if they're walking around. It makes no sense. Anyway.
Yeah, then there is the rover space fight.
The rover space fight that ends up with the killing the coffee eventually.
Yeah.
Basically suicides.
He implodes.
Yeah. But then, of course, Bud and Lindsay are damaged, and so of course she has to sacrifice herself and drown, so that Bud can drag her dead body back to whatever, which also seems rather morbid and morose.
No, she explained this. The water is so cold that it'll essentially preserve her once she has drowned so they can revive her. It's so cold that is a viable option.
Yeah,
it's so cold that it will help keep her alive.
Yeah,
could swim in that same so cold water for like 15 minutes, right?
Yes,
just a couple minutes before, and then be fine, win a fight with a Navy SEAL, and then be okay to pilot a rover.
It's just so ridiculous. It really was. Also, the gratuitous boobs.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Gratuitous, maybe. Certainly not not an erotic erotic setting for them.
Blue boobies. Of course, they bring her back and they have that fake dramatic, oh my God, she's dead, she's not dead, she's dead, she's not dead. And they're like, I'm not giving up and don't die. I mean, all this bullshit. And of course, they are able to resuscitate her. Ta-da!
It's so dumb, but I still cared about it because of Ed Harris.
It was dumb. And so then they decide that now that Coffee's dead, the other Navy SEALs are coming back to rationality, rational behavior.
The one injured dude, not the headband dude. That guy was still being a dick.
And so then they talk about, you know, they still need to disarm the warhead. And the rover, they programmed the rover, the rat dude programmed the rover to go down to the space alien creature, Atlantean thing. So they talk about, well, nobody could dive down that far without dying. And then, of course, they've got the magic lung pink fluid, and they talk about how they're going to do that. And they have this whole big dramatic, you won't be able to talk because of the fluid, and which I appreciate that. Appreciated mm-hmm. that was how they got around, you know, the talking and had to type, and I'm bad at typing. And of course, he goes down and they don't hear from him and he stops responding and they just assume he's dead. But also, she's the worst support. They're all telling her, like, talk to him, be supportive. And she's like, no, like, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, I did like this part. I think this part still held up. I mean, not the dive part. Like, the work Ed Harris was doing was great, and the, you know, watching him kind of float down into the titular abyss. I thought that part was still really effective, with him getting all shaky and stuff. It's good. Oh man, Eric would have loved the red wire, blue wire thing in this movie.
I did. That's
one of his favorite tropes, and it was great because it's so deep. He has to use chemical lights for anything to be visible, and when he finally reaches the bomb, when they're telling him how to disarm it, he can't see what colors they are because it's like this yellow light. So everything just kind of looks black and yellow.
That actually, I thought that was actually witty, and that made me giggle.
Mm-hmm.
So here's where the synopsis seems to take a turn from a movie that I didn't see. So I wonder if if there's different versions of this movie. There's like an extended cut that we did not see.
Uh-huh. What did we miss?
Well, that's what this says. And so, or maybe I fell asleep. I don't know. The non-terrestrial being things, NTIs is what they call them here, because that's what he calls them, right? The rat dude calls them. Finds Bud as his oxygen runs out and bring him onto their ship. An immense glowing city. They provide him with air to breathe, at his pressure, of course, and engage in satellite communication with him when they show him several television clips that they've stored of humanity's destructive behavior, silently explaining that they have left humans alone, but now believe humans are too self-destructive to continue this behavior. They also show Bud a few current newscasts of incredible phenomenon along continental coasts on the surface. The NTIs are using their ability to control water from a thousand foot high tsunamis off the coasts of every continent on Earth, threatening to destroy humanity. Bud asks the NTIs what right they have to judge the human race. He has shown historical clips of Hitler, war, and genocide. However, when the NTIs had intercepted Bud's transmission, Love You, Wife, they decide to stop the storm and the tsunamis, realizing humans do possess compassion for one another.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, but at least it would make more sense. I mean, because why did they do it? Why did they say, why? Yeah. So... anyway,
the version I saw, it went right from taking him through the city to just
suddenly he's on the surface.
Them saying, well, then it showed his data spread, love you wife.
Yeah.
And that's it. I like that version much better than what you just described.
I don't know.
I didn't need motivation from these deep sea aliens. I just didn't need it. Of course, maybe I was just tired at this point too. I wanted to get to the end. Yeah, I was fine with it. I mean, I could connect my own dots with why they did what they did.
The alien or Atlantean or NTI vessel rises up from the depths and raises all the ships and the rig and everybody, brings them all up to the surface. They're all sad. They think Bud's dead. They make several remarks about how, ooh, we survived. They must have done something to avoid us getting the bends.
Yep. I'm glad they took that route because I didn't want to hear another explanation. Some pseudoscience explanation.
And then out comes Bud from the cargo bay doors. I don't know where it comes from anyway. He wanders out from somewhere.
Always happy to see Ed Harris.
Yeah. And then of course, you know, the movies then, you know, magically the cast iron bitch and Bud are gonna get back together. That's the moral of the story.
Well, they should. They're made for each other.
Yeah. The end. My notes. I'm not going to go too terribly into my notes. The mask breathing inside the masks. I thought I was going to die from hearing it.
When they're breathing the liquids.
No, when they went to the sub the first time and the guy hit his head and all that, I thought, oh man, this is let's see. I wrote, oh yeah, that wedding ring would have held up against that door. Sure. Mm-hmm. I talked about pressure. Oh, shooting bullets around warheads.
Not a great idea.
Yeah. What could possibly go wrong? The equipment collapses and implodes, but magically not Bud's body. Also, some of the NTI interface stuff is a ripoff of 2001.
That's fine.
Other than that, that was like 2.5 hours of my life I'm not getting back. So, in if I'm going to give it my judgment, which of course, you know, I will, because that's what I do. I'm judgy, super judgy, with a cape and everything. I don't know. This is generously a C movie, but it's more a D movie. It's bad. It's not good. I don't know. I didn't hate it, but I didn't like it. And I certainly don't have any desire to go watch it again. And it makes me just think less of James Cameron, but that opinion wasn't necessarily high to begin with. So,
yeah, this movie, I feel like it's kind of lost to time.
Fair.
I mean, you can see some of the bones here that he used better in subsequent movies. You know, the water tentacle. That kind of became the liquid metal effect, right? That was still holds up really well in T2. The epic love story with water. I mean, that became one of the biggest movies of all time in Titanic. The ham-handed environmental stuff, that's what really kind of, I think, ruined Avatar.
Ham-handed. That's very generous of you.
Yeah. So, yeah. Go watch a better Ed Harris movie. Go watch a better Michael Biehn movie. Go watch The Rock and Tombstone.
There's some comments on IMDb. When color coding wires, only one would have a stripe. Having two wires, both with stripes, defeats the purpose of having striped wiring systems.
Oh, God. I'd rather talk about chomping versus champing.
Wow. Some people really love this movie, though. Yeesh.
I thought I loved this movie until I watched it.
140 minutes, so. Oh, the special edition is 171 minutes. We did not see that edition. That would have had all this additional Hitler stuff.
I'm pretty sure I own that special edition.
I'm pretty sure that's what was in the movie theaters. So, I'm pretty sure the theatrical release was, because I remember it being stupid long. I remember it being almost 3 hours long.
Yeah. So, oh, and Color of Money. Go, Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio. Go watch Color of Money. So, The Rock, Tombstone, Color of Money.
See,
way better movies.
A good Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio movie is Civil Action. Gene Hackman.
John Travolta, too, right? Am I thinking of something else?
I think you're thinking of something else.
All right.
Maybe I have the name of the movie wrong. She was in Robin Hood, right? Wasn't she?
Yeah, she made Marion.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Salamander. TV series. Got to go back further. Slam Dance. Mussolini, The Untold Story. Class Action.
Civil Action had John Travolta.
That's correct.
And Robert Duvall.
Whoa, what just happened? Oh, yes. Gene Hackman, Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, Lawrence Fishburne, Donald Moffat, Fred Thompson, Jonathan Silverman, Anne Ramsey, Robert David Hall. I remember that not being a terrible movie.
I don't think I've seen it.
I think I saw it in the movie theaters, I want to say. When did it come out? Let's see, 91, March 15th, 91. We're talking about a completely different movie now. No budget listed, cumulative gross of $28 million. I imagine that they did not make a lot of money. But
Oh, maybe. I mean, they were making movies back in those days for
well, this those, movie didn't have any
mid-tier movies, right?
Yeah, they didn't have any special effects in that movie, really. So, I remember being not a terrible movie. It's got 6.4 on IMDb, which is the same as I think this got The Abyss. Oh no, The Abyss got 7.5. That's a lie. I don't buy that. 7.5. That's somebody's cooking the numbers there. So anyway, all right. I don't have anything else about the movie. Do you have anything else about the movie you want to talk about?
No, we've said enough about that movie.
we've talked more about this movie than it deserves.
I'm bummed. It bummed me out. I had high hopes for this movie.
Oh, I'm sorry. The housekeeping.
I don't have a ton of stuff. What movie are you and Eric doing next week? Or are you doing one?
I don't think we are.
Okay, yeah, because you're coming up here.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm gonna look. I'll look at stuff, but I don't know. In my housekeeping, I was just watching. I was looking for something just light to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I stumbled on Hulu. Amy Schumer Learns to Cook.
How do you like that?
Actually, I found it quite charming and funny. There's only 4 episodes on Hulu, so it's not a large investment, but it made me giggle. So it's I would never eat, I think, any of the food that they cook. Just because it just seems, I don't know, it's just not my kind of food. But it's funny to watch her and her husband interact. So
is he a chef?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, he's a chefy dude. And this, of course, happened at the beginning of COVID lockdown. And so they're in a, and they're staying in somebody else's house doing this and can't get ingredients, of course, because it's lockdown. So they're making, sometimes they're making do with stuff that they just happen to have or are stealing from neighbors' gardens.
Nice.
So it's kind of entertaining. Anyway, it's kind of cute for only being a couple episodes. So if you're bored and want something just for some really low calorie, empty fill time, it's good background noise.
That's funny. There's a show on HBO Max called Selena and Chef, and it sounds like a very similar premise. And it was during lockdown, and Selena Gomez decided she wanted to learn how to cook because she's a disaster in the kitchen. So she was taught how to make like fancy dishes from very well-known chefs, like essentially over Zoom.
Oh.
I don't have like Selena Gomez is not part of my entertainment life, so I had no history with her. But true to form, she was a disaster in the kitchen. So it was kind of funny watching the different chefs. My kids really love the show. But it was good. It was way better than I expected it to be, but it was funny watching her interact with the different chefs and seeing which chefs were like really patient with her and which chefs were not. Like I think the very first episode, there's a French chef named Ludo something. And he's in his home and he's trying to teach her how to cook, how to make like a very traditional French omelet. And he's got this heavy French accent, and he's like yelling at her the whole time.
That sounds uncomfortable.
She was really good natured about it.
Okay.
But it was good. I would recommend that. And they're short. They're like, you know, 25-minute episodes.
Yeah, these are hour episodes, but they're, I don't understand the format. They're hour long episodes, but they're actually two episodes in one episode. So I don't understand why they did it that way, but ta-da. Otherwise, yeah, I'll be there in just a couple days.
Nice.
Right? Today's we're recording on Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So I'll be there in this less than 72 hours. So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's a brother Sanderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother J, welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey. Not in a creepy way. Not in a creepy way.